Good evening. If you could ask God a question, any question, one question, what would that question be? For each one of us, that would be something either that we've thought long and hard about and already have an answer, or something that we might have to puzzle over for a while. But our questions would inevitably be different for each one of us. Some of them would be the same. Some of them would be different. We all have questions, qualms, doubts, things that we wonder about, things that trouble us. I suspect that, as I've said before, when we finally get to heaven and have an opportunity to get our questions answered, the questions that we have now won't even enter our mind. We might have other questions. We might not have any questions at all. In the book of Job, we read about a man who had some questions. He wanted to ask God. He longed, he desired greatly to speak to God because of the loss that he had suffered in his life. Job had been a good man, a righteous man, a man who was close to God. At least he felt that he was close to God. And yet all of these terrible things happened to him, and he had questions about that as to why they happened, as to whether or not God was punishing him. He didn't believe that he had done anything to warrant the terrible things that had happened to him, and so he wondered why they had. Just wanted to ask God. Eventually, we read at the end of the book that God gives Job the opportunity. And when he does, God has a question for Job. A series of questions for Job. We read in Job chapter 38 that God speaks from the whirlwind and says, "Job, I have some questions for you." Now, wouldn't that be something if you had some pressing and really bothering question, you know, something that you really had a lot of heart turmoil about? And God does show up one day, and he starts out by saying, "I have some questions for you." How would you feel about that? A pop quiz from God. That would be a scary thing, wouldn't it? And we never think in those terms. We never think about the fact that God has questions for us. God knows everything, right? Why would he want to ask us anything? Well, what he would ask us, of course, is, why are you acting the way that you are? Why do you think the way that you do? That's exactly what he asked Adam and Eve. Why? What put that into your head? Why do you think that? But here, God asked Job some very specific questions, and they're about nature. And I thought that we would look at these questions that God asked and think about the significance of the answers. So if you'd like, you can turn with me to Job chapter 38, but you can follow along also here on the screen. And we'll look at what God says to Job. Job 38, verses 1 and following. "Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, 'Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge?'" Now that's a question, but it's more of a statement than anything else. And then God says to Job, "Dress for action," or as it says in the old version, "Gird your loins." Get ready. We might say, you know, brace up your lace up your boots, or get ready. "Dress for action like a man. I will question you, and you make it known to me." Okay, you have questions for me, I've got questions for you. Now, the great thing about this passage, the encouraging thing about this passage, is these words here: "The Lord answered Job." You know, Job wanted an answer. God gave him one. It wasn't necessarily the answer that he was looking for. Wasn't even necessarily the answer to the question that he was asking. But it was, in a more pressing and more important and more fulfilling way, an answer. God answered Job, and he answers us too. Maybe not necessarily the way that we want to be answered, but he answers us. In this context, God answers Job with questions. And the questions are designed to get Job to think about what kind of answer he needs to realize that God is giving him. Are you prepared for God to ask you questions, to remind you, to get you to thinking about who you are and who God is and about what life is really all about? Because sometimes all we want to do is just be petulant children. We just want to answer to our questions. We don't really want to think about the ramifications of our relationship with God. We're bothered by something, we're troubled, and we just want our answer. But there are greater questions and more important issues, usually, than the questions that we're asking. Are you prepared for God to ask you more important questions about more important things? Well, here God is trying to teach Job a lesson by asking him some questions. And as I say, they have to do with nature. And so let's look at these questions and think about what it is that God is saying. In Job chapter 38 and verse 4, God says this, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding, who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it, on what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstones?" Now basically what God is asking Job is that, can you explain how this world was made and put together? Do you know how this was accomplished? Were you there when it was done? Can you describe how it was done? Can you explain to me why it was done the way that it was? And naturally, from the standpoint of Job, the answer to all these questions is no, I don't know, I don't understand, I wasn't there, it's beyond me, I'm incapable of understanding it. And that's really the point, isn't it? Job, you live in a world on which you stand on solid ground and you depend upon this world being ordered the way that it is so that you can survive, and yet you don't even begin to understand and know why it's built the way that it is and how it got that way. So what do you do in your ignorance? What do you do not understanding and not knowing? You just count on it working out according to God's ordained will. You just trust that that solid ground is going to work out. You just go about your life day in and day out, ignorant of how it was so structured and yet relying completely upon it, even though you don't know how. Now, we in our science, in our modern science, we know a little bit more about how the world is structured, and you know, and it's quite beautiful and it's quite complex, the way the world is put together. The layers that go down into the earth, the lithosphere, the outer shell of the earth, the mantles of the continents, and the liquid layers of molten rock and metal, and then the inner solid core. We all study this in science if you paid attention in grade school, even middle school. And yet it's still such a complex matter and issue that scientists still spend lots of effort studying the inner composition of the earth, because we don't even yet know fully how the earth is put together. We discover things all of the time. And when I say we, I don't mean me. I'm talking about science, about the scientific community. Geologists, you know, they're constantly using instruments and trying to figure out exactly how the inner layers of the earth are composed, what they're composed of. And it really, truly is a wonder. It's a remarkable thing. And how the outer crust, you know, the continental shelves and so forth ride upon those lower levels, and how the tectonic plates move back and forth and gives rise to mountains and volcanoes and things like that. It's really quite fascinating, at least it is to me. But still more questions, still things that we don't know. And even with what we do know, we could not even begin to understand how we could accomplish that, how we could do it. We could not possibly make this happen. We can study what has happened, what God has made, but to make it happen? And we all depend upon this. We rely upon it. For instance, the difference between the inner core of the earth and some of the outer layers and the spin rates generate a magnetic field. Just like a, I guess, kind of like a motor, you know, the spinning coils of metal around a magnet, and it creates a magnetic field, and the magnetic field protects the planet Earth from the cosmic radiation that comes from the sun and keeps us all from being baked, being cooked. You think a sunburn you've experienced is bad, you can't even begin to imagine what it would be like if the inner core of this planet wasn't composed the way that it is. We would all be dead. Life on this planet would not be possible. And I'm not pretending that I fully understand the science of it and how it works, but I know one thing, it works. Because God made it that way. And I depend upon it. I depend upon the fact that God made something that I don't understand. And even modern science does not fully understand. As I say, they still spend hundreds and thousands of man hours and millions of dollars studying and trying to figure out how all these things work. And yet it works. And we absolutely trust God to make that work. If I had to make it work, we'd all be dead. Because I can't make it work. But God made it work. I trust Him to make it work. Look at these questions. Job chapter 38, verse 11. Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made clouds its garment, and thick darkness its swaddling band, and prescribed limits for it, and set bars and doors, and said, thus far shall you come and no further, and here shall your proud waves be stayed. Now I recognize that the language is metaphorical. You know, there are not literal doors and bars that keep the sea where it is. Those are words, that's language that Job could have understood. But the significance, the meaning of the words is that God set an order for the sea, a place for the sea, an arrangement for the mighty and powerful ocean to be where it is, but to stay where it is. And that's important. That's needful. And how God did that, and that's beyond me. But it's important that He did. This planet that we live on is covered with oceans, great and mighty, powerful oceans. They drive and generate the weather here on Earth in reaction to the sun. And we need that. We need those oceans to be out there generating all of that moisture coming up into the clouds and raining on the Earth. And we need the life that comes from the sea, and the transportation that goes across the sea. Oceans have always been important for the life of humanity. God made them. But He made them to be manageable so that they don't overwhelm the earth, that they don't kill all of us. And the structure of the mantle of the earth and the continental shelves and how the oceans are blocked and kept from going any further is quite remarkable. The engineering involved. The ocean stays where it is. Because when it even gets out of its banks just a little bit on occasion, it wreaks havoc on the shoreline and on people. Here we live safely, just a few miles from the ocean, because of the barriers that God has put in place. And the tidal plains, you know, that intersection between ocean and land, so much of the life in the ocean and on the earth is dependent upon those exchanges of nutrients coming in and out. And all of the little creatures that feed upon it and the bigger creatures that feed upon them. Our lives depend upon the tidal action, the intersection between sea and land, and the moon that causes the tidal action. How all of that was arranged and set up and the way that it works, I have the barest inkling of understanding about it, and yet my life depends upon it, and I trust God. I must trust God that He has put those things in place. And I trust God with my very life that the ocean won't overwhelm the land and kill me in my sleep. I trust Him to do that, even though I don't understand how He does it. And the ocean currents, which drive life and weather around the globe, it's a remarkable system. Intricately designed. It's an amazing thing. And yet God, He takes care of that so that I don't have to worry about it. These questions, have you commanded, verse 12, have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place that it might take hold of the skirts of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? It is changed like clay under the seal, and its features stand out like a garment. You know, I have trouble sometimes setting our clock, our alarm clock, and I kind of get aggravated, you know. I push the wrong buttons, or I go too far, or I set the clock wrong, or the power goes out, and the alarm doesn't go off and wake me up in the morning, and I can't even get my alarm clock to work right. But man, the dawn comes like clockwork. The dawn comes. Comes beautiful and mighty and powerful and gives light on the earth. It's an amazing thing, isn't it? The system that God put in place for that sun to rise, to give us the day. And I sleep all night long, not having to worry one bit about that dawn coming. Because God set that in place. The description of the world turning as the seal, as the clay turns under the seal, is very apropos. It's exactly the way that they did things in the ancient world. They had seals that were cylinders, and they would roll them across the clay, and that's how the seal impression was made in the clay. And that's exactly how the world turns underneath the sun, and the sun rises, the dawn comes up, and we have our day, and God made it that way. And Job, he, in all likelihood, didn't even begin to understand how God did that, and we have a lot better understanding of it, and yet, man, it's remarkable, isn't it? That sun, and all of its energy and power, and its longevity, its endurance, and how for thousands of years, it has given us the light and the energy that we need to survive here in the world. Give us our daylight. God did that. I don't even begin to understand that. You know, I have the barest inkling, the barest vague notion of how all of that works. And I just trust God that He makes that work. And He does. I didn't get my verses in there. Job 38, going forward. Have you entered into the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the gates of deep darkness? Have you comprehended the expanse of the earth? Declare it if you know all this. He's asking Job, do you know about the springs of the sea? Have you walked in the springs of the sea? Well, obviously, the answer for Job is no. I don't even know what you're talking about, the springs and the sea. The recesses of the deep. Wouldn't have the ability to reach them or to even know what's down there. What we do now, you know, we've discovered these springs, these hydrothermal vents in the very deepest parts of the ocean using robotic devices and submarines. We go down there and we take these pictures, and you can see, if you see this kind of shady area, this gives you a better idea of the hot water pouring out of them and the springs of water and all the life that depends on them. There's all of these are crabs in the recesses of the deep living on a whole ecology, ecological niche there around these hydrothermal vents and all of the worms and the eels. And here's some creatures. This is called a Dumbo squid because of its ears. And this is called a Yeti crab, you know. And it's some kind of snail. And all of these creatures, we had no idea that they existed. Whole new species have been found in just the last decade or so, based on going down and looking at these springs in the bottom of the ocean and this whole life, this whole world down there. Exist, continue to exist. God set this up. He makes this happen. And the whole world is filled with things like this. Without our knowledge, without our intervention, without our having to fuss with it or to do anything, without our understanding, because God makes this happen. The world is filled with wonder and beauty. It's beyond us. All we can do is just marvel at it. Beginning of verse 19, where is the way of the dwelling of light, and where is the place of darkness that you may take it to its territory and that you may discern the paths to its home? You know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. And of course, God's being sarcastic because Job doesn't know. He wasn't born then. He has no idea how light works, the path that it takes and where it goes. He has no idea at all. Of course, through science, we know a little bit more about the way that light works and the path that it takes and the electromagnetic spectrum. And all of the wavelengths of light that we can't even see with our eyes that are undetected. The radio waves and the microwaves and all the rest of it. Funny, quirky way that it works, that it acts like a particle and a wave. It's neither one or the other. It's an amazing thing, light. I don't really understand it, but it works for me. I trust that it'll work for me. It does. God made it to work for me, and I trust Him. Verse 22, have you entered the storehouses of the snow, or have you seen the storehouses of the hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? Now, you know, skeptics and people who, just want to make fun of the Bible, they say, oh, there is no such thing as a storehouse of snow or a storehouse of hail. Again, God is accommodating Job, using language that Job can understand. The concept, the idea is, where does snow come from? How is it made? Job can just, all he could stand there and just, you know, stick his finger on his cheek and go, I have no idea. I don't know where the snow comes from. It wasn't there and now it's here. It comes from somewhere, you know. That's for you, God, to take care of, for you to manage. And that's the point, isn't it? Snow is a wonderful thing. You know, there are places where there's a lot of snow stored in the world. The poles and, you know, and mountain glaciers are, after a fashion, storehouses of snow. And we really kind of come to depend on those storehouses of snow. You know how it snows all winter in the mountains? And then when it warms up, the heat of the sun slowly releases that moisture into little streams and rivers. And it keeps those rivers going all year long, you see. And waters the lower parts of the continents. God worked that system out. Really, we really all depend on it. And snow itself is a beautiful thing. It's an amazing thing, even on the smallest scale. You know, they say that no two snowflakes are alike. I have no way of verifying that because, you know, there are so many. But they are truly wonders of God. God did that. And I don't know how he did that, but man, he sure did a good job. And then the hail, you know, the hail shows up and tears things up, you know, and it's an amazing thing, hail is. If you look at and cut a cross-section of a piece of hail, it's got rings, it's got layers. And the reason it does is because of the way that hail works. It starts out being a small particle, and then it just keeps getting recycled in the thunderhead of a cloud and keeps getting layer after layer of ice until it finally gets heavy enough to fall out. It's an amazing thing, you know, the way that God made that happen. And he's used it. He's used hail on occasion to accomplish his will in a matter. God did that. Or this question, who has cleft a channel, verse 25, who has cleft a channel for the torrents of rain and a way for the thunderbolt to bring rain on a land where no man is, on the desert in which there is no man, to satisfy the waste and to desolate land and to make the ground sprout with grass? You know, lightning is a fantastic thing. It's an amazing thing. It's a wondrous thing. It's beautiful to look at, but terrifying as well. And the way that it works is quite incredible. You know, the differentiation of the particles in the clouds between an accumulation of electrons creating an area of positive buildup and negative buildup, and then the way there's a streamer or a channel that comes down and connects the negative base of the cloud with a buildup of positive charge on the earth. And I'm explaining this poorly because I really don't understand it. But the result is the lightning and the rain. And I know we need that. God makes that happen. All of these things are